Today's interview is with Toby Dorr, a woman with a felony conviction. She found herself in the lowest point possible, in prison, on suicide watch. While in prison, she was able to firsthand see the need to help the brokenness of female inmates. She has now been approached by Dateline and Lifetime to share her story. Toby has now written a memoir and has a series of workbooks to help women mend the pieces of their life. She has taken a bad decision and turned it into a positive healing platform for others. I hope you are moved as much as I was by Toby's interview. Welcome back. This is Brandy Von Holten, and today I have a special guest with me. Her name is Toby Dorr, so T-O-B-Y. Last name is D-O-R-R. Okay, so Toby has a very different background, okay? So Toby actually used to, and I will say this right here, and then we'll make sure and get some clarification. So she used to work within the prison system, and she was helping inmates she would work with dogs with the inmates, and then she fell in love with one of the inmates and actually broke him out. And then had a little rendezvous, okay, for a little while. And then, you know, she got caught and then did some prison time. And then while she was in prison, now this is a highly educated woman, and whenever she was in prison, she now had time. And it's my understanding is that she got to see firsthand that the chance of an inmate going back to prison is extremely high. So what she got to see was how to help these women, and that there's a need to help women that are broken to get unbroken and to actually heal. And she has developed a workbook, and she's written books, and she's been talked to by Lifetime, and we'll get into all of this right here about her story. So it is, you know, behind something negative, something positive's got to come out of this, okay? So she is now, you know, taking her situation, but then it made her aware of this great need there were to help women, help women grow and develop and to heal from being incarcerated so they can come out and not be repeat offenders and move on in a productive manner, okay? So, and, you know, before we even get started, we've all done something bad, okay? We've all done something bad. I know that I have done bad things before, and so no judging there. She has done her time, and now she's on the other side and trying to help people, and it's all about, picking up the pieces and moving on. So, Toby, okay, let's start with anything that I said wrong, okay? So let's go with that. Any big corrections on the general?
I think everything you said, Brandy, was pretty right on. So
okay. So let's go with how, okay, so tell me what your, certifications were, your college degrees, what all you did, and then what exactly were you doing in the prisons with the dogs?
Okay, well, before I started the prison dog program, I had two bachelor's degrees, one in business administration and one in management of accounting, and I had a corporate career at Sprint and got laid off in 2001 in the big tech downfall, and I realized that I wanted to do something outside of the corporate world, so I took a part-time job at my vet clinic, which quickly turned into a full-time job, and I loved working with the animals. And in 2004, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And that kind of is a wake-up call. Even though my cancer was very curable and I'm okay now, still hearing the word cancer after your name kind of makes you stop and think, oh my, you know, I'm not here forever.
Oh no.
And what have I done to make my time worthwhile? I hadn't done anything. I'd taken vacations, you know, and I'd had a corporate career, but I wasn't changing the world. I wasn't making a difference.
You know, Toby, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but I actually had cancer before of my uterus.
Like, oh, really?
A lot of people, they don't know, like they, They don't know why David and I don't have children. Mm-hmm. And like every now and then somebody will get real brave and ask me, and like, well, I had cancer of my mm-hmm. uterus. And then I also had like a tumor in a breast before that they had to remove. And that wasn't cancerous. But anyways, you know, I understand like mm-hmm. hearing the big C word, cancer, is scary, but here we are.
That's right.
Here we are.
Yeah. It's just moving like on. Anything else in life. You can move on from it, I think. Right. And I decided that it was time I start doing something to make a difference in the world. And I really fell in love with the idea of a prison dog program because I'd seen one on TV, but I had no idea how to start one. So I thought, well, I'll do the next best thing. I'll start a dog rescue group, and I'll take in dogs. We lived out in the country. We had 10 acres. We had a few horses. And I thought, I have space in my barn. I can bring a few dogs in here, and I can train them, and I can take them to dog adoption events. And within a few days of my deciding to start the dog rescue group, a representative from the prison right up the street from us came to me and said, have you ever thought about doing a prison dog program? And I was like, well, of course, that's been my dream. I mean, how does this happen? It mm-hmm. was just like providence, you know? And so he came to approach me on a Monday, and on Wednesday I did a two-hour presentation for the warden and the executive team at the prison. And on Friday I took seven dogs into the prison, and okay. Safe Harbor Prison Dog Program was born.
Okay. All right. So, wow. Like that right there, it sounds like it was meant to be.
It was. It was meant to be. Yeah.
Okay. So how long did you do that?
I did the prison dog program for 18 months.
18 months,
and in that 18 months, I rescued 1,000 dogs.
Okay. Well, that right there deserves like a huge round of applause. You know what I mean? Because, man, this podcast, Big Boss Mary, you know, like, well, most of my horse people or, you know, we love dogs. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, I can't say everybody loves dogs. I can say every one of my closest friends love
yes.
dogs,
yes.
you know, and so, man, 1,000 dogs. Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
every
gosh.
Dog I took was going to be put to sleep if I didn't take them.
Oh, okay. Well, that right there makes me already love you even more. So,
yeah, so it was awesome. And I felt so good. And I knew that I can make a difference in the lives of these dogs, but I wasn't prepared for the difference I made in the lives of the inmates because, you know, as humans, we're social creatures. And can you imagine going 10 or 20 or 30 years without ever hugging anyone?
No.
It doesn't no. work. And so by bringing these dogs into the prison, and I had them live with the inmates in their cells, so any inmate in that prison, whether they were in the dog program or not, could walk up to a dog and pet them and hug them and take them for a walk if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And almost overnight, it just changed the whole atmosphere of the prison.
Oh, yeah. Man, I couldn't even, I mean, like, my dog, I love my dog.
Yes.
You know, her name's Katie Ray. Mm-hmm. Okay, we two named her because she's country, and all mm-hmm. country animals and people get two named, okay? Uh-huh. Like my brother's Gary Lynn. But, man, I could just see that right there. Like, you know, so many people are broken, and we don't even realize how broken. We're not talking about people in prison. We're talking mm-hmm. about
just people.
People in general. And just, man, I see so many people that just, I mean, and their animals are their children or their spouse.
It's their opportunity to be real with something. They don't have to hide anything from their dog.
No.
And their dog loves them no matter what.
Oh, yeah, it's unconditional. Mm-hmm. You know, like people live longer with animals.
That's right. That's right. They certainly do. So the prison dog program, I was so proud of it, and it made such a difference. And at the end, you know, 16 months into the prison dog program, my dad was dying of cancer, and I was really struggling with that because when I was 5 years old, my dad got burned really bad in an accident in our yard, and I saw it, mm-hmm. and I remembered it, and I know now after lots of counseling and lots of time that, you know, that little five-year-old girl kind of fractured off and was a broken part of me that never grew up. And the idea of my dad dying again, because at the time he was burned and he was gone for 10 months in the hospital, I believed he was dead. And I just couldn't do it anymore. And so, You know, there was an inmate in the prison who kind of stood out. He was intelligent, and he spent a lot of time talking to me, and he noticed that I was struggling with something and asked me, and, you know, we started talking about my dad dying, and then our conversations just developed and led to something not proper. And
yeah, but it's human.
It is human.
It's human nature. I mean, like, we are human. We are animals, you know?
Yeah, that's
true. People have needs, emotional needs, physical needs.
Mm-hmm. And at that particular time in my life, I was just having a meltdown, really, emotionally. And
you don't have to justify the need of love. You know what I mean? Like, yes, it was a, you know, it was with a prisoner.
That's right.
And a dog, you know, that was, you were in there, but, like, I still understand emotions.
Yeah, that's really important. Thanks for saying that. Because I do feel like a lot of times I have to justify it, but maybe I don't. And maybe from now on I won't.
Well, you know what? I will tell you, whenever, because I met you and your husband, it's not the same husband that you had.
That's correct.
And you have, his
and
name
he's
is,
not the one I broke out of prison either.
Oh, yeah, so. No. Okay, so I met him before, and, you know, you had told me the story, and actually I was not receptive to it at first, and but now I've evolved as a person, and I'm just like, ooh, I don't need to be judging anybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you got in trouble for that, you did your time, but now I love the helping that you can help with others, and now I realize that without you having the uh-oh moment that, you know, that this part couldn't have happened. You know what I mean? Like, man, there's so many bad things that people have done, but it's what they make of it. So now I'm like a big fan, but at first I was really turned off. I was like, oh, man, she's going to make money off of doing something bad. But now I see the growth that can happen for hundreds of thousands of people. And if these people, these women that are incarcerated, can come out being better, then it's going to make our whole society better.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, my feeling is that every one of us here has something special that we can bring to the world.
Right.
And we have this whole group of people that as a society, we've just discarded them and written them off. You know, they're in prison and they're not redeemable and they can't do anything. But what if we can heal those people, and when they come out, they can bring forth that one thing that they have to contribute to the world, and then we all win.
Yep. No, yeah, most definitely. Or, you know, from a taxpayer's perspective, then we can spend our money on other things if we're not having to pay for somebody that's incarcerated. You know, like, oh my gosh, you know how many hungry people, or like roads need to be fixed, or, you know, other things need to be done instead of paying for someone that's incarcerated.
That's right.
So if we can make them into productive citizens, then heck yeah, this is great.
Right. And they have a unique thing that they can offer that a lot of people can't, because they've been somewhere that's been so dark and so unredeemable. And to overcome that, boy, they just bring forth a passion and a strength that the world needs.
You know, we've had these at Von Holten Ranch. We've hosted these all-around cowboy challenges. And I remember one of the people that had competed in ours had done some prison time. And then he was working as, like, a dump truck driver. Well, he won. And, like, I put him in a couple of magazines. And, like, some of his friends and family members were like, oh my gosh, you don't understand, like, how, like, just to be, you know, not judged, being like, oh, there's that dump truck driver that did prison time before. No, we're like, dude, that's a bad mamma jamma. He won the all-around cowboy challenge. Like, oh my gosh, he is like, and then I got to see the love that he had towards his family. Man, he appreciated being able to do these events. He appreciated the sitting around the campfire and the time spent with family and getting to see laughter. Like, it meant, it was very emotional for me. And, like, other people didn't understand what was going on, but, like, man, whenever I got with knowing his background and then getting to watch him, oh, it was like, ooh, I hope that other inmates get to feel that, like, and appreciate it. You know what I mean? So, like, it was very life-changing for me to be able to be part of that event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, people that have been in prison, especially right after they get out, like the first 2 years, it's a huge adjustment period. But you don't take things for granted at all. I mean, I just appreciated being able to open a door and walk out of it whenever I wanted to. I mean, sometimes I just spend 20 minutes going in and out the door because it was such a cool thing.
Okay, that you had the freedom. Mm-hmm. See, whenever you were like, oh, things that I was thinking, ooh, I get to have good coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, I get to wear what I want to wear. But you were like going through a door.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
That was so, and you know, my mom, I was living with my mom right when I got out of prison. And she said, Toby, you bring such delight to my days because I love watching you fall in love with everything all over again.
Okay. All right. So, you and this gentleman, you helped him escape.
I did.
Helped him escape. And then how long until y'all were caught?
It was almost 2 weeks. So okay. 12 days, actually.
And you know what? I don't want to spend a lot of time on this part right here, mm-hmm. but I know inquiring minds.
That's
always,
right.
Oh, they always mm-hmm. want to know, you mm-hmm. know. Everybody always wants to know that. That okay, so y'all were out for 2 weeks. Well, and at the time, you were married.
I was married.
And so that, mm-hmm. that marriage ended.
It did end.
Okay.
And you know, the crazy thing is, my one sane thought when I agreed to the escape was, mm-hmm. I guess they'll let me get divorced now.
Oh, okay. So you were ready for it.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, you're, okay.
Yeah, and I had been trying to make a change, and I just didn't have the strength of character, and I didn't feel like my family would support me in that
right.
decision, and I just felt kind of trapped.
Man, I know feeling trapped is not a good feeling.
It's never a good feeling.
Oh, no.
It leads you to do desperate things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen people, yeah, that's whenever big stuff. I mean,
that's
like,
right.
You know, most people know that I have like a fight background, and sometimes when we're training, we'll fight multiple opponents, and they call that bull in the ring mm. because then you get very brassy mm-hmm. and stuff gets real, and that's that trapped feeling.
Yeah.
And nothing, oh, I have seen women that were in abusive relationships and they didn't have the money to get out of them, and that trapped feeling, mm-hmm. that's when bad stuff happens.
It
but
is.
And people never, whenever they think that they're trapped, they're not really trapped, but they think they're trapped. Nobody, I mean, like right now, so we have Von Holten Ranch. I mean, it's got some debt. We've got some years that it's going to take us, but people are like, oh, you're trapped. And I'm like, I ain't trapped. If we wanted to get out of this, we could tomorrow be
right.
out of this. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? We could sell, mm-hmm. do something different. I'm not trapped. I love what I do. You know what I mean? So, like, trapped is, if you think that you're trapped in a relationship that's not working, you can get untrapped.
That's right.
You got untrapped real fast.
I did get untrapped. And so, you know, my message to women today is that I want to inspire them to escape their prisons, because we all have prisons, and almost all of them are self-made, and we hold the key to every single one of them. We just have to have the strength of character and the confidence to unlock those doors and leave.
Okay, so Tony Robbins, do you?
I do.
Okay, Tony Robbins is a motivational speaker, mm-hmm. and he talks about how people, whenever they're trying to quit smoking, they'll say, oh, it took me 20 years to quit smoking. It took me 30 years to quit smoking. He's like, no, it didn't. It took you 1 second. Mm-hmm. Whenever you decided to make that change, it might have taken you 20 years to get to that 1 second.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yeah, so I love Tony Robbins. Mm-hmm. He's got some great things, but something that he has said before, I think it's him, because I got it from my martial arts instructor, said, if anything matters, everything matters. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of that. So little shout out to Tony Robbins right in the middle of this. Okay, so you, how long did you end up having to
I served 27 months.
27 months. Okay, so that's 2 years and 3 months.
That's right. And the funny thing is, when I first went to jail and went to court for the first time, and my attorney, who was my brother's best friend, and he came to court and he said, Your Honor, I just took her case last night. I haven't even had a chance to talk to my client. Could I get a 2-week continuance, you know, and we'll come back in 2 weeks? And I had this big meltdown because I was like, 2 weeks? I have to stay in jail for 2 weeks?
Oh.
I can't do that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And I just laughed, like, 2 weeks, that's not.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah, because, yeah, it turned into a lot of two weeks.
A lot longer.
A lot longer. Okay, so before this right here, we were talking about, you know, she was like, man, whenever I was doing prison time, I had time. Mm-hmm. And then I immediately was like, oh, time. Oh my gosh, that's what I'm all, mm-hmm. I'm all, if I give someone my time, that's my love language. You know, there's like five mm-hmm. love language, which I'm not saying prison is a love language. Do not, if you take that from this, you are not listening, okay? I'm just saying, like, time is so valuable, you know? And so you had time, and here you are, you're an educated woman. You've got time to reflect, but then you got time to meet people
That's
also
right.
and see a different side of something that you would have never been able to see if you didn't. Mm-hmm.
So there was this pivot point while I was in prison, and it changed everything for me. But it was that moment when I realized, wow, for the first time in my life, I have this gift of time. I can use all this time to look back at my life and figure out what's broken, you know, and start digging in those wounds. Because to heal, I think you got to dig in them and pull out the scabs and let it bleed all over again and work through that pain. And I had the perfect opportunity to do that. And so after I got out of prison, that didn't mean that by the time I was out of prison, I was done healing. I spent years in counseling, and, you know, it took me quite a while.
Hey, did they have counselors in prison?
No. I mean, yes, but it's a joke. So here's the deal.
Okay.
They have counselors in prison, and you go sit in their office for 20 minutes, and they're just like, so how you doing today? You know, are you going out to the yard later? I mean, it's nothing.
I wonder what their workload is.
It's probably pretty high.
I bet it's not. I bet it's just not able for them to really get into. I kind of feel sorry for them because of the workload is probably not okay.
That's right. And when I was in prison, I don't recall there ever being more than one counselor at any prison. And there's like hundreds of people.
Man, that does not. For your experience, that poor counselor was not set up for success.
No, he was not.
And it was a gentleman. Mm-hmm. Okay, which is okay because, like, hey, you know, that's like there's gynecologists that are men and women.
Yeah.
You know, I just, like, assumed it would have been a female.
But I tell you what, I did when I got out of prison and I started going to a counselor. And I went to a guy counselor for a while. And then I transferred to a woman counselor. And, you know, that's just what I needed. The woman has that emotional connection to the brokenness in me.
We're different.
We're totally different.
We are different. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Hey, I love that you're talking about going to counseling. I mean, I've been to a counselor before. I know whenever we cashed in my retirement to build our ranch and spent it in 24 hours, I went to a it makes my stomach turn just thinking about it. But that insecurity messed with me more than what I realized. I went to a counselor for a month over that, and I've went to a counselor over my weight before. Mm-hmm. So, man, if you are embarrassed about going to counseling, then you're hanging out with the wrong people.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Counseling is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Oh, man. You know, yeah, because I have so much junk in this head, and everybody has junk. I got junk in my head. I got junk in the trunk. I got junk everywhere, okay?
That's so right. I can relate.
You can help. Yeah. I mean, people buy organizational tools. Well, like, your mind needs to be organized. I need to process some stuff. Mm-hmm. So do not let therapy have a bad thing in your mind. Therapy is a beautiful thing. If somebody's making fun of you, don't listen to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are the five people you spend the most time with in your life is basically who you are. And if one of those people is not supporting you for going to therapy, then you down to four and get another number five.
That's
okay.
Exactly right. You know, and Chris, who's my husband now, he has been such a godsend for me because he supported me in everything I've done and has pushed me to heal and grow. So he's a large part of why I'm where I am today. And I think that's what a marriage should be.
My husband, I love him so much because he loves me.
Yes.
And here I am doing a Big Boss Mare podcast, you know, and You know, I've had people in my life tell me that no man would ever want a large wife, and my husband's all like, hey, let's trademark Big Boss Mare, and we put it on some leggings and all sorts of stuff. You know, we got to embrace things.
I think that's awesome. I totally agree.
I hope that other people get to have the relationship that I have got to have with my husband. It sounds like you, too, would wish this relationship upon other people.
It makes you complete. I mean, it really does. You know, and I have this feeling that my mother-in-law, Chris's mom, used to say this, that a marriage is not two people standing and gazing into each other's eyes lovingly. It's two people standing on a path and moving forward together with their eyes on the same vision.
I know my husband, his name is David. 1 + 1 usually equals 2, mm-hmm. but with us, 1 + 1 = 3.
Yeah, I always say we're better together. 1 + 1 = 11.
Oh, you know? Okay.
I mean, it's exponentially more.
Yes, yeah, mm-hmm. most definitely. I mean, finding a great spouse is... Mm-hmm. It's all key. And sometimes people don't get it right the first time.
That's exactly right.
That was
right.
just a warm-up round, you
That's
know?
That's right. A really long warm-up round.
Okay, well, where were we? Okay, so you, so tell us where, I don't know where we were with this right here.
So I had this experience when I was in prison. And I was on suicide watch. I'd been on suicide watch several different times.
Okay.
But this one particular time was the only time I should have been on suicide watch. And I was just praying, you know, please, please just let me die. I don't want to deal with this. This is something I can't overcome. You know, this is such a bad place. I don't know how to get out from where I am. I don't know how to get past this broken mess that I am. And I heard this voice come into that suicide watch cell, and it said, you will get through this, and I'll be right here with you every step of the way. And when you get out of here, you are going to use your story to change the lives of women. And I feel like that was God talking to me. And so I took that to heart, and I felt like, you know, I had a commandment, I had a directive, I had a purpose in life. And so when I got out of prison, I knew that I needed to act on it, because it was so clear to me that my story could change the lives of women. So I started writing a book, and it took me 10 years because I wasn't ready to tell the story. I still had so much more healing to do. But when I got to the point last year where I was ready to tell the story, I had my book finished in 10 weeks.
Okay.
And I have an agent now, and we have some publishers looking at it. It's not published yet, but the coronavirus shut down the whole publishing industry.
Coronavirus.
Yes. So one day, and I kind of had this feeling, okay, so I wrote this memoir, and the memoir is all about rebuilding my life. Mm-hmm. So it's about how to go back in your life and take the broken things and work through them and how to heal them.
All right.
It's not really like a salacious novel of a prison escape and a,
right.
You know,
that's like such a small part. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's what everybody's like, oh my goodness, this lady is a, are you a, like a felon? A felon.
I'm a felon.
You're a felon. And you've done prison time, but like literally that's the beginning.
That was the catalyst.
Yeah.
For everything else.
This right here could not have happened without the crime.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe we only grow when we're in the deep valleys.
Oh, girl, yes. Mm-hmm. I know that right there. Like, I mean, I've been homeless. Mm-hmm. I've been homeless before. I've been homeless twice. And going through some stuff, and that's whenever I figure things out, mm-hmm. you know, and I have failed college classes and was on academic probation, and by gosh, that's whenever I got serious about stuff. And like, you know, it's easier to give birth than to raise the dead, but then sometimes you have to step back and raise the dead.
That's exactly
and
right.
So, because it's easier to start with something new and fresh than it is to, mm-hmm. you know, like our ranch, okay, so mm-hmm. I'm going to nobody had lived here for 40 years when we bought this. Do you know how much easier it would have been to pick a different part of the ranch and build everything clean? But instead, we had all of, I mean, so, like, I couldn't even, like, yes, whenever you find yourself at the bottom, that's whenever beautiful things are going
to
happen.
You only have one way to go. You can either stay there or you can go up.
I know. From where you were all the way down to, like, Suicide Watch, I mean, that's deep. That's a low spot. And, like, man, I've had family members that committed suicide, and it's just like, oh. Yeah. If, you know, if they, it's a dark, dark place, and I'm happy that you came up out of this, and now that you know, I love seeing you out of prison, I love seeing these, I'm getting to look at her books, and they're beautiful, you know, and to see that you have, like, blossomed into somebody that's going to help others, just the fact that you're going to be able to help others. So tell us about some of these books.
Yes, yeah, so, you know, I wrote the memoir. But I realized...
So what's the difference between a memoir and a book?
A memoir is a type of book. So, like, there's, you know, historical fiction, and there's horror stories, and there's thrillers, and there's true crime.
Fiction,
memoir
yeah.
is just a book about your life. It's
okay.
It's a true story about how you perceive the things that
so
happen.
So a biography and a memoir?
They're different because a biography is written by somebody else looking in. A memoir is written by... the person.
So an autobiography?
It's like an autobiography.
Okay.
But the difference is, an autobiography is like, this is the day I was born, and this is where I am today.
It's more timeline.
A memoir is just a piece of your story.
Okay.
That's,
all right.
you know, significant
I
to
had
tell.
To be educated. Sorry that we had to pause
right.
the podcast
right.
for a second.
That's all right. Maybe someone else had that same question.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
you know, I knew I could reach women with my memoir, but I felt like there was something more. I needed to do something that more directly impacted the women in prison. And so I had this idea. I realized, I went back and thought about that pivot point I reached in prison where I realized that I could use this time to work on myself instead of just counting down the minutes of a day. And so I created a workbook called Butterflies Unleashed. And when I started working on this workbook, all these things about butterflies kept coming to me. And butterflies have this amazing transformational story.
Right.
And so I thought if I could tell that story to women in prison, but then relate all the stages of a butterfly's life to their life, that would make it easier for them to understand where they could go. And so I created the first workbook, and it's a 3-month program, a 12-week program for women in prison. And it's called Butterflies Unleashed, and it's a journey of transformation. So in that workbook, we have 6 exercises in every week, and we have a creative exercise because I want to tap into all parts of a woman's mind, not just one. So we have a creative exercise, we have a writing exercise, we have a research exercise, and then I share a story of a woman who's been in prison and has gotten out and has successfully rebuilt their lives.
So would this workbook help other women that have nothing to do with
would.
Prison? So describe a woman that this would help that has not been incarcerated.
It would help any woman because, in my opinion, I think every woman has something broken in their life that they are, you know, either actively working on or not even aware of. But I give speeches a lot to groups of women, and I call them the country club women.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I go to these big country clubs, and they're women who are affluent in society, and they have their attorneys, or they're married to attorneys, or, you know, they have a place in society. They're someone that everybody looks up to.
And prestigious.
Prestigious. And when I go talk to those groups of women, they are all sobbing while I'm speaking. And they come up to me afterwards and go, oh, my God, you're me. So, and I was one of those corporate wives. I wasn't married to a man who had a corporate job, but I had a corporate job and I was a wife.
Right.
And I did all those things, too. And I was so broken inside, but I didn't know how to address it. So when I go speak to these country club women and they come up to me and say, I can understand. I can be right there. I understand exactly what you're saying. So it's their story too.
Right.
And I've sold these books online to all kinds of women.
So where can they find one of these?
On my website, which is theunleashedseries.com.
Theunleashedseries.com. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, all right. The butterfly.
Yes.
Okay. We were talking about it and coming out. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I want you to tell this part.
So, one of the amazing things I learned about butterflies on this in this research is that, you know, butterflies, there's so many things, but a caterpillar, in order to become a butterfly, they have to hang by a plug that they've created on the back end and drop down off of a leaf. Well, first of all, caterpillars are all about clinging on. They never let go. So in order to transform, they have to be willing to totally let go and trust in something they can't understand. And then they build this chrysalis around them.
Right.
And while they're in the chrysalis, the caterpillar completely dies. It ceases to exist. And inside there is this goo that reforms itself into a butterfly. So first of all, you have to be willing to let go, and you have to be willing to die to everything you've known. And then this beautiful butterfly transformation takes place. And when the butterfly is ready to come out of the chrysalis, if you happen upon one, you can see them flexing their wings and the chrysalis is mm-hmm. kind of moving and it looks kind of violent. And if you decide that you want to help them by just taking your fingernail and slitting open the chrysalis to help them get out,
right,
the butterfly will live, but they will never be able to fly.
Okay, so I want you to say that last part one more time, okay? If you do what? If you help
a butterfly mm-hmm. escape from its chrysalis, if you help it to break out of its chrysalis, it will live, but it will never be able to fly. Never.
Okay.
Because it is the act of breaking free that gives its wings the strength to fly.
Okay, so I want to take that sentence right there. And do you know how many people that... And they'll never let their children struggle.
Yes.
But then their kids don't have that fight.
That's right.
They've got to, they need to fail.
They need to
wallow around it, and it needs to suck. It needs to just be awful, because if everything is handed to them, they will never be able to fly.
That's
yes,
exactly
they will live.
Right. So, that's exactly right.
Okay, so I don't know how much y'all know, like, whenever I went to college, my parents didn't really agree with my boyfriend, okay? And so they disowned me for a little while, okay? And we're way past that. David's awesome. You know, David was not the boyfriend mm-hmm. that my parents disapproved of. But I mean, they took the vehicle away.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And I was in college, was rough. But then I remember one time needing to turn in like a photocopy of something for a paper to prove where I'd gotten my sources at. And uh-huh. I mean, I graduated a while back, and but it needed to be a hard copy for this instructor, and I needed a dime. I needed 10 cents to pay for one piece of paper, you know, to print
uh-huh.
it. And I had to wait a week, and the assignment was late, because I didn't have a dime. I remember going to the, I walked to a car wash, because a lot of times people will throw change out
yeah.
to see if I could find 10 cents.
Wow.
Okay, so like, man, whenever you're talking about this butterfly won't fly mm-hmm. if you help it, and I'm mm-hmm. over here like, now, whenever I see people that throw money away, mm-hmm. I think about that dime so much. And like now, even though our business is doing better, I do calculate a profit margin for everything to check on. I check everything. I check all amounts of, you know, shipping mm-hmm. and everything mm-hmm. because of that.
That dime. That's
a
lesson. That's
dime.
Right.
Oh,
so
I need to put a dime on a necklace or something
yeah,
because, like.
That's a great message.
But, mm-hmm. man, people don't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, but that struggle has made me it's made me so much more aware. Yeah. I mean, I will drive a little bit just to save some money on mm-hmm. some fuel. Mm-hmm. I've clipped coupons, but that experience of having to wait a week for 10 cents, it's ingrained
that's
into
a great
my soul.
Story. Yeah, I love that.
But
story.
Whenever you hear that, that's the first thing mm-hmm. I think about, because like Toby and I have a lot of parallels. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of parallels about what she's trying to do. I'm not trying to do anything with you know, like she has a different background than I do.
Uh-huh.
Thank goodness. Woo. But we love dogs uh-huh. and we
that's
are
right.
both getting better mm-hmm. and we've both had some rough times in our life. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
And, but we're all trying to help everybody.
That's right. And yeah. if you can help someone learn from a piece of your story, then
right.
it makes that lesson not a total waste of time, because now you can, it's the ripple effect. You can share it with so many other people.
Most definitely.
So I think that's awesome. So I have finished my first workbook and I decided that wasn't enough. So I have Be Unleashed, which is a story of community and how, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times women that get in trouble in some way are because of the people they surround themselves with.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That book is all about how to create a healthy community, how to find a healthy community, and how to be a productive member of a healthy community.
Oh, yeah. Well, we talked about earlier, the five people you spend the most
That's
time
right.
with, there,
That's
there's
exactly
the bee
right.
thing.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
And so then there are... You know, I have the Dragonflies Unleashed book, which is a story of leadership to help these women who feel a calling, just like I did, to do something bigger, but not maybe knowing how to put a form to it. So that
right.
book is all about helping them find that vision.
A lot
and
of
go
people just
it.
Don't know how to get started. They're like,
"That's right.
I want to do great things, but how do I get mm-hmm. started?" So
yeah.
this right here is.
Yeah, so there's going to be a series. Right now there's 9 workbooks on the drawing board, so who knows how many I'll end up with, but it'll probably be more.
So are inmates allowed to have this? I don't know, and you're going to have to educate
okay,
me.
Okay, so I've been working with some of the prisons and talking to them. I've been talking to the Chillicothe Prison in Missouri here, and they're interested.
So women's prisons?
Women's prisons.
Okay, because they probably won't let you work in the men's prisons
no,
anymore.
Or the women's. I can't even go in as a volunteer in the
okay.
women's prison. Maybe
okay.
someday I'll be able to, but right now, probably not.
Okay.
So there are programs already in a lot of women's prisons.
Okay.
And so I'm working with the people who run those programs to bring this program in as part of their curriculum.
Because this is professional development.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is. I'm also working with halfway houses. There's a couple of halfway houses in Kansas City that are using this workbook. And I want to approach battered women's shelters and, you know, all those kinds of things. And one of the things that I put together, which I think serves such a great purpose, is that, you know, when I go give those speeches to the country club women, mm-hmm. all of them ask, what can we do to make
right.
a difference?
That's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm. I was like, could someone fund?
We have a sponsorship program
okay.
on the website. So
okay, so you have a sponsorship program?
I have a sponsorship program on the website, and so someone can go out there and sponsor a woman, mm-hmm. and that includes, you know, contact with me and, you know, communications with me and mm-hmm. the workbooks that they need. And so we do offer that on the website. And we've had several people take advantage of that and sponsor women in prison so that I
okay.
can send books to. And sometimes it's not a woman in prison. Sometimes it's a woman who's out on parole and she really needs help. So we've talked to parole officers and try to get some connections there. So anytime we have a woman who needs a book and can't afford it, then
right.
we can.
Well, you know, and some people are going to have different levels of comfort with, you know, some people are going to be completely turned off by doing anything with somebody that's incarcerated, mm-hmm. you know, so, but the people that are, ladies that are going through into a battered woman shelter, mm-hmm. that would be a different option
right.
for them.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. And, lost my train of thought. So,
okay, so why insects?
Because they're so small and we overlook them. We take them for granted.
Oh.
And they have these unbelievable
okay.
stories. So, you know, it's part of, I just want them to be aware of what goes on around them. And everybody can go find a butterfly and, you know,
right,
on a
it's
walk.
Just a connection.
Yeah.
Well, and man, how many women out there feel insignificant mm-hmm. and taken for granted? How many people? It doesn't have to be a woman, you know, like that's like a major thing right there about feeling insignificant or feeling, you know,
that's
like
right.
nobody,
and, you
like
know,
it doesn't
so
matter.
Tell them the stories of these insects. So like bees, if we didn't have bees,
oh.
we wouldn't eat.
Well,
they're so significant.
I don't know if the science is correct, but I've always been underneath the understanding that if bees weren't around, that like the whole ecosystem just collapses.
4 years. That's
Four,
what we've got. Four
yeah.
years once the last bee's gone.
Right.
So, you know, these insects have these amazing stories, and people don't realize what they are, and I think you can make parallels to your own life from
right.
just looking at the smallest of things.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's nice, instead of just somebody talking to them,
mm-hmm.
talking out, you need to do
yeah.
this, you need to
mm-hmm.
do that. But if you allow people to find their own truth in that,
mm-hmm.
Like my book series is mm-hmm. is written about like from the horse's perspective,
yes.
you know, and then it allows people to draw their own truth
right.
from that.
And
so
it's
so
safe.
Much better.
It's
yeah.
safe to talk about the horse's issues or the butterfly's issues. And it's
yeah.
a little bit scary to talk about this is your issue.
Yeah.
So,
well, okay. So, the very beginning of our interview, you had talked about your father was passing away from cancer. Did he pass away
he
from
did.
He did
he,
pass away
he died while I was in jail
while you're in jail okay and so you know a lot of people have quote-unquote father issues. Do you think that was the beginning of yours was a father issue?
Well, I so looked up to my dad. I mean
right.
he was the center of our world, and I lived my entire life trying to do things that would make my dad proud of me. And so I cultivated this immense sense of duty and perfection.
Right.
Because I wanted to make him proud. And I
what,
wanted
was
to
he proud
up.
Of you?
I think that he was.
Right.
But, you know, there were seven of us kids. It's hard to stand out in a sea of seven.
Okay.
And my dad was not one to say, oh, I think you're doing awesome things. But,
right.
you know, I believe he was proud of the things I'd done.
You know, I, with my father lives here at the ranch mm-hmm. with us now, and we have a different relationship that's,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's
yeah.
get better for sure. But I know that, like, I get to hear from trail guests all the time how proud he is of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot remember him ever saying
yes.
that to me.
Yes.
You know, and
yes.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm okay with hearing it like indirectly, but I understand, you know, like
mm-hmm.
whenever I was younger, you know, I did a lot of really cool things, but never
mm-hmm.
did quite
yes.
get that. So like
mm-hmm.
if you are listening to this, you need to tell people you're proud of. People need to hear, I am proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
People need to hear that. They
That's
don't
so
need
true.
To know it. They don't need to think it or assume it. They need to hear
they
it.
They do need to hear it. That is important.
Yeah.
I agree.
Most
you
definitely.
You know, in so much time, when we have little kids, we say, don't do that. Don't do that. Oh, don't go over there. Don't do this. Why are you doing that? And we
oh,
don't
yeah.
ever say, what an awesome thing you just drew. You know,
right.
we don't say that enough.
Right, most definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to. I'm hoping that we can swap out some books or something.
Yeah,
like
I
would love to look at your book.
Yeah,
you know,
that sounds great. So I just want to share a couple other things.
Okay.
So when I got out of prison, I couldn't get a job. You know, I had two
right.
college degrees. I couldn't get a job. Nobody wanted to hire me because I was a felon. I don't blame them. There was
right.
200 people applying for every job opening. So
correct.
You got to throw people out in the trash can somehow.
Right.
And so I ended up starting my own business, and I went back to school and got two master's degrees after I got out of prison.
At what age were you whenever you went back to get those master's?
I was at 55.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are your master's in now?
Internet marketing and new media design, which
oh
I've really
gosh.
Lived on the design for this workbook.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, of course, internet marketing. Oh, yeah. Internet marketing with my websites, and now it's helping me build a platform for these workbooks. So
wow, okay, so 55 going back and getting your master's in something to do with computers. Boy, mm-hmm. Ooh, I yeah. see some people struggle with some stuff. Like I have yes. showed so many people how to take photos on their phone or uh-huh. how to do, I'm like, that's right. don't do this on Facebook. Don't, you know, this is how you need to interact. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so my mom is in her 60s, and I'm like, Mom, whenever you reply on social media, everybody sees that.
That's right.
Quit introducing yourself mm-hmm. as, this is Brandy's mom from Arkansas, as mm-hmm. like a reply to it. I'm like, stop doing that.
Yes.
So, like, I'm over here giggling because I'm like, ooh, 55, going back to college mm-hmm. for something to do mm-hmm. with, you know. I bet that was rough.
It was rough, but actually I love going to school.
Oh, I'm
so
sure. Yeah.
I had a fun time with it. And, you know, another couple things I want to throw out. The population of the United States doesn't quite make up 5% of the entire world's population.
Okay.
But we have 25% of the world's incarcerated population.
Okay, so hold on. You're saying that the United States population is only 5% of the total global population?
That's right. Not quite 5%. It's 4.8.
Good Lord. I would have thought it would have been 15.
I would have thought so,
20,
too.
Uh-huh. But I know that, like, Asia mm-hmm. is a lot more compacted mm-hmm. than what we are.
Yeah.
So
the total
Do you know
population,
other countries? Do you know other countries' numbers?
I don't know their numbers. I should probably look them up.
I would love to know.
I think
yeah.
Japan's got a pretty high
oh,
population density
yeah.
and
yeah.
some of the other Asian countries. So, but we make up 4.8% of the global population.
But then 25% of all people incarcerated are from the United States.
Are in the United States. That's right.
I wonder if other countries kill them. Instead of incarcerating them.
I think that in the United States, we throw people in prison for small things that really don't matter. I mean, that really aren't going to, you know, they're not a danger to society.
Okay.
And we give them longer sentences, so they're in there longer.
But you're not saying that the crime that you did not warrant a prison
no,
sentence,
I'm
right?
Not
okay,
that
I just
at
wanted
all.
To clarify
no.
that. Like, I didn't want anybody
no.
to be like, oh,
no,
she
no,
had
no.
me and I'm crying. And then they
no,
were like, switch.
No. No, I needed to do my prison time, and I got a sentence that was
right.
just, and I'm satisfied with what I got.
Right. So I know a lot of times people get put into, you know, I don't even know what the percentage breakdown is, but I know, like, hot checks, I think people can end up doing time. But
well, like, I was in jail with a woman who was a drug addict. And she turned to prostitution, and her husband had custody of their kids. And so they'd pick her up on the streets, and they'd put her in jail for failure to pay child support.
Okay, yeah. She needed,
she needed help,
education. She needed.
Mm-hmm. So she'd sit in jail for 30 days, and then they'd open the door and put her right back on the street, right where they picked her up from.
And then she had no money to pay the child support
and
because she'd been incarcerated.
30 days later, she'd come back for 30 days more. I mean, that's such a vicious cycle, and nobody's winning. Her children aren't winning. Her husband's not winning. She's not winning. The taxpayers aren't winning.
Yeah, that is, like, all the way around
mm-hmm.
rough. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's alternatives, I think, to some of the prison sentences.
Do you keep up with that lady?
No, I don't. I don't keep up with her, but I do keep up with some of the women I was in prison with.
Okay. So I will tell you, man, like, questions that I have, I'm over here like, was crime as bad as what people thought it was in prison? Was it?
Well, here's the deal. There's a huge difference between men's prisons and women's prisons.
Okay.
So I spent 18 months as a volunteer inside the men's prison. And I was in there for 8 or 9 hours a day.
Right. And this was before the incarceration. This was with the
that
dogs.
Was with the, as yep. a volunteer. And in the men's prison, it is violent. It is dangerous. It is scary. It's a scary
okay.
place. And you can get beat up or killed for the slightest of things.
Right.
And I kind of expected the women's prisons were going to be the same way, but they weren't. It was like this big giant slumber party with a bunch of women from high school on steroids. I mean, you'd get into fights over somebody curled their hair wrong and, you know, have women slapping each other and pulling hair, but you didn't have any, you know, danger.
And so that was, we'll make sure everybody knows that that was your experience. But whenever you went to prison, you were older and she's, and Toby's not very tall.
Yeah.
I wonder if you got a different, you know, I'm sure
perhaps. Yeah. I'm sure that there are some women's prisons that are dangerous.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I'm sure that everyone's experience could be different than mine. I was always in maximum custody, which is where most of the big problem people are.
Right.
So I feel like I kind of got a good idea of what prison is like.
Right.
But it wasn't nearly as violent and dangerous as a men's prison was.
Right. Okay.
But the one difference is, in the men's prisons, there were all kinds of programs for the men. There was GED classes. There were classes to teach them, you know, jobs that they could do outside. There was book clubs. There was things
all the time. They didn't have that at your prison?
They didn't have it at the women's prison. No.
Why?
I think the reason is because if the men don't get something to occupy them, they riot. And they cause trouble.
Well, they,
and if women don't get something, you know, they just, okay, what, you know, whatever. They don't stand up for themselves.
Do you know how many, do you know the numbers of men incarcerated versus women incarcerated?
There's a lot more men incarcerated. Right. I don't know what the numbers are.
I wonder if that's why there's more programs, just because yeah. Okay, so if you wanted to get in touch with Toby, if you're interested in this book, if you have any questions for her story, if you have anything, how can they get in touch with you?
TobyDoor.com.
Okay, so it's TobyDoor.com.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Toby Doerr. You know, we have so many parallels. Do you know I own?
You really do.
I own BrandyVonHolton.com.
Yes, yes.
I own BigBossMare.com. Uh-huh. I own Country-Tough.com. Yeah. I own VonHoltonRanch.com. There's mm-hmm. even another one in there. I think I bought VonHoltonLeatherCo.com, but we're not doing anything with that yet. But, like, how many people out there, like, here we are sitting at a table. You and I both have backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Both of us have written material, and we're both trying to help the world be a better place.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And when I listened to you read to me from your books earlier, it's so parallel to what I'm doing over here for women in prison. There's so many parallels.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, hey, guys, if you make sure and tune in to our next Big Boss Mare podcast, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
Okay. Thanks, Brandy.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.